to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh, now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, happy Wednesday, baby. Hello, everyone. How are you? Loving it. Glad to have you. Glad to be here on this midway point of the week. Glad you're stopping by with us. Man, it is a fun week, and it is going to continue to roll on as the Indiana Hoosiers are heading to Atlanta, Hotlanta, Hoosierlanta, for the next step in the college football playoff, the Peach Bowl semifinal round, taking on the number 5 Oregon Ducks. Plenty to get to regarding that. Dylan Sin will stop by. In addition to Kyle Nedrup and Andy Staples from On Three, we'll get a great national perspective on just all that is going on with Indiana, not just the winning, this crazy ride that Indiana is taking their fans on to a potential unprecedented 16-0 national championship if they are able to complete that, not wanting to get ahead of things. But that's what's at stake, and you can't ignore it. In the 50th anniversary of the last undefeated national champion basketball program, what would that be like? Yeah, that would be something. Man, talking about yesterday, the wait, this didn't impact Indiana. They're the only bye team to get a win in the 2 years of the 12-team playoff system. But it's crazy. You go 24 days or 25 days, whatever it is, without playing a game. That's over 3 weeks. That's 3.5 weeks. Then you play the three toughest games of your life over the course of 19 days. Yeah, something's not right with that math, but that's okay. Hey, Oregon's got, they lost a running back, their top running back yesterday as the portal problems. Oregon Ducks running back Jordan Davidson, who leads the team with 15 rushing touchdowns, is out for Friday's semifinal matchup against number 1 Indiana. He ranks second on the Ducks in carries with 113 and rushing yards, nearly 700. He was listed as out on Tuesday's availability report matchup. But the Oregonian reported earlier Tuesday that the freshman sustained a broken clavicle in last week's quarterfinal win against Texas Tech in the Orange Bowl. Did not know that. I didn't realize that. This is not the guy I'm talking about then. Huh. Because they have somebody hit the portal. So they've lost him. I'll be darned. I thought that they lost a running back to the portal. The Oregonian reported earlier that, he suffered that broken clavicle. Okay. So he further reduces an Oregon running back's room that saw two players. There we go. Jaden Lamar and Makai Hughes enter the transfer portal. And Lamar had 270 yards and 4 touchdowns in 8 games. While Hughes, a highly touted transfer from Tulane, logged only 17 carries as a Duck. One of these guys, though, it may have been Lamar, had the longest run from scrimmage in their game against Texas Tech, I believe. So, yeah, getting hit a little bit, but we Indiana's gotten hit on the defensive line. We saw them make those adjustments, so We'll see about that. Former Michigan State quarterback Aiden Childs is going to Northwestern. Now, if you want to keep up with everything that's really going on, all the players at Indiana is landing. Whew. Go to thehoosier.com. They've got it all there. But it is a healthy, healthy list that keeps growing. Next year's talent pool for the Hoosiers should be the best ever as far as, you know, if we're talking star rankings. And I know that Indiana is doing this without that right now, and you on one side you wonder, okay, are they gonna lose anything? No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think they're just gonna be better. But the guys they have now, they all have this chip on their shoulder because none of them are recruited by the teams they're playing. That kind of goes away when you've got guys that are coming in from Miami and from Notre Dame and from all these other places. You lose a little bit of that, but I think the fact that Kurt Cignetti gets that out of his players, or you don't play. That's pretty simple. But he gets that out of his players, gets that out of his team. He shows them that's why. He shows them the success. This is what happens when you do what we ask you to do. You put that big old bling on your finger, baby. And Indiana's already rocking up the rings right now. Got them a Big Ten championship ring with an undefeated season on that. Got a Rose Bowl. You get a Rose Bowl ring. Going to get a Peach Bowl ring. And if you can cap it all off, man, they're going to have ring on every finger and maybe some for their toes. Rocking it in. Jason says they've got a tough schedule next year. Yeah, they do. But they've got a tough schedule right now. Oregon. They're a good team. But for one thing, I think Indiana fans are going to take over Atlanta again. And I think that this is going to be kind of the opposite for what Oregon would have as a home game. This is going to be how things are in reverse in Eugene, because this is also going to be inside. And since I think there's a probability of rain in Atlanta on Friday, the retractable roof, which I didn't know Mercedes-Benz Stadium had a retractable roof, but it does. Very cool looking situation. It might be the coolest looking stadium most fans have ever been in. It might be the coolest one I've ever been in, and I haven't been there yet. But just seeing the pictures, looking forward to getting there, though, and heading down as soon as today's show's over. Speaking of which, tomorrow, coming to you from the College Football Hall of Fame. Looking forward to that. There's joint press conferences tomorrow with the head coaches. So much going on. Media availability tonight as the team arrives, hoping to be there and planning to be there for that. So we've got a lot going on, man, and that's what we do. We bring the action to you from where it is. Looking forward to Andy Staples from On Three today, as they have kept up from a national perspective on what's going on in college football, and he'll have a great insight on this impact of this influx of talent that is coming to Bloomington. Not being recruited to Bloomington, coming to Bloomington, people, on their own, wanting to come play here. Josh Hoover's coming to play for Kurt Cignetti, period. End of story. And he wants to get better. He wants to move on to that next level. As will Fernando Mendoza, who will likely be the number one pick in the draft, to the Las Vegas Raiders, and his hero mentor, Tom Brady, who is a minority owner. So, which his deal with Fox and him being an owner, that's going to become more and more of a situation. But that's a whole nother kettle of worms, baby. But yeah, it's going to be cool to see Fernando get to go. How crazy is life when all that stuff comes into those stars align. I mean, wow. It's nuts. But Russell says ESPN is picking Miami beating Oregon for the championship. Yeah. Is that ESPN's metrics? Is that ESPN people? I've got Indiana winning this game kind of similar to what they won the first one, 20-30, something in that realm. I never expect blowouts in games like this. So we shall see. Yeah, Oregon will use their senior Noah Whittington and a true freshman. Hey, let's take a break. We'll get Dylan Sin in here to continue the conversation. Hope you're having a good one. We've got lots more coming up on this Wednesday. Indiana Sports Beat, Jim Coyle with you. Back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Wednesday. Dylan Sin with us each week on his way to the ATL right now. So joining us by phone, and we'll get him situated here in a second. But, yeah, everybody heading down to Atlanta, I think virtually everyone driving, of course. This is a driver. Dylan, how's it going, my friend?
I'm good. I am on my way to Atlanta right now, as you said. I'm looking forward to getting there tonight. It's a significantly different schedule than it was for the Rose Bowl, where you get there 3, 4, 5 days beforehand. The teams get there early. You're doing a whole lot of media availability. Like, there's an entire morning dedicated to media availability. This is much more like a normal game week, and then the team gets there.
Yeah, it's definitely a different schedule of how things go, because I get there very, very late tonight with the media availability at 9 p.m., which that's about the latest one I think I've ever encountered. And you have to do what you got to do, and that is the case, and that's how it is. You've got to make hay when the sun shines, and the teams will roll in. They're expected, I guess, to have to be there today. And so looking forward to hearing from both coaches tonight. And we'll see what Mr. Lanning has to say. At this point, I don't know what you said. Now, Dan Lanning may have some things to say, because he's had some personnel issues, turnover. So, but other than that, I don't know what else Kurt Cignetti can say. Hell, I don't even know what to ask him at this point, to be honest with you. You're kind of running out of questions. But yesterday we had media availability with several of the players, and try to get that on for you as well. As I think Dylan has lost his connection. He's traveling, which would make it more difficult. But these guys are making all of these different adjustments, and I can imagine they have done more media just for the Rose Bowl. The amount of media is crazy, but it's because of it's such a bigger scope. It is such a massive scope. As a matter of fact, the Rose Bowl was the most watched college football playoff game, drawing nearly it peaked at over 25 million, but I think it finished at 24, something around 24 million viewers for that game, the most of the playoff games, but the others were up as well. But it's viewership is up, man, and Indiana's the story, and you can imagine what Indiana and Oregon's going to be like. I mean, that should be, again, I don't know. Do you get the same numbers there because Oregon is back out on the West Coast, and you tend to lose numbers with West Coast teams. And you had all of those Southeastern Conference folks watching that were in utter shock. I don't think Dylan's with us right now. And if he is, just say something, brother. But, we'll have to get him back on. Hopefully he can rejoin the studio and we'll get him back on here. But heading to Atlanta, as many fans are, speaking of which, be safe. Safe travels to everybody that is heading down. I'm sure the I-65 is going to be a busy, busy place, as will, I-69 for a way. I haven't looked at how the route should be from the Evansville peeps. But the thing about this is Atlanta's just a hub and a spoke in the wheel, rather. Fans are becoming from all over for Indiana, from Florida, this is the easy drive for them. Man, if you took drew a 7-hour circle around Atlanta, holy smokes, you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting an Indiana fan somewhere. And I expect them to take over Mercedes-Benz Stadium again. However they got their hands on all those tickets for the Rose Bowl, I expect them to do the same thing again for this Peach Bowl. Now, if the Hoosiers win this one and are able to move on, that could become an issue, because I think they would likely be playing Miami in Miami. And I'm sure several of the Miami folks have already gotten their hands on tickets for that game, and we shall see. Dylan's trying to rejoin us here, and if you ever are, Dylan, just start talking, brother, and I'll
yeah, I can hear you. Am I coming through a little bit more now?
Oh, loud and clear. One thing I was just talking about was I expect Mercedes-Benz Stadium to look a lot like the Rose Bowl did, which was shocking because it was, mostly Indiana fans. And I think that the same thing's going to happen in Atlanta.
Yeah, I would guess probably the same thing, maybe not to quite the same extent, because obviously the thing with Alabama was that those fans have been to so many like playoff and championship games over the years. They had a little bit of fatigue. They've had fatigue for several years. I remember I covered the national championship when they played Georgia in 2022 in Indianapolis, and they I talked to some fans, Alabama fans, in the parking lot there. They were like, we go to one or two of these every year, and maybe the SEC championship game too, and it gets expensive. And so they had no connection to the Rose Bowl. Obviously the Rose Bowl is kind of the Big Ten's whole thing. It has been for years, so it meant a lot more to Indiana even from that perspective too. So I don't think it'll be quite the same extent with the Peach Bowl, but I do think Indiana is going to travel. I would expect them to be maybe 60-40 in this game, and there will be a lot of red in that stadium. It should be a lot of fun. So I know several Indiana people that are going to be there already, and should be a really fun atmosphere.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic, because since it's a driver, there's no reason for fans to get down there any earlier than they did before. But actually there's more things to do. You've got the College Football Hall of Fame that is now in Atlanta. And as a matter of fact, Dylan, we have media availability tomorrow morning. And I will be actually doing the show from the Hall of Fame down there. But the two coaches will be getting together in a joint press conference, and we'll be hearing from them. But it's also going to be an opportunity to see whatever Indiana's contributions to the Hall of Fame are. And I'm sure they'll do some other things as well, which would be – it's kind of cool to have that little pit stop.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a huge part of it, is like they have that down there now. It's kind of a destination for college football fans, like Canton is for the NFL, or like Cooperstown is for baseball. You know, you have that kind of extra incentive to go, something to do the day before the game. Obviously the national championship game was in Atlanta last year, Ohio State and Notre Dame. And so this this is a city that has hosted big-time college football for a long time. They host the SEC championship game every year. So it is used to hosting these games. It's very friendly for fans that come into town. I was there last year for the national championship game, and it was a lot of fun. There was a lot to do, a lot of places right around kind of the hotels that most people frequent. There's a lot of things within walking distance. And so I think that's it's a good city for a big college football game. I think obviously Los Angeles is a little bit different because the Rose Bowl is its own thing, but Atlanta knows how to host college football, big time college football. There will be plenty for fans to do there when they get there. The Hall of Fame being a big part of that.
Oh, without question. And it's also, while Atlanta is still a large city, one of the largest cities in the country, it's not Los Angeles. And things are a little more compact as far as the arena, as far as the College Football Hall of Fame being close by. I think the stadium is not far from the hotels, and everything is a lot closer to each other. So, and there's a lot of things to do, of course, there in Atlanta. Indiana fans there recently for the basketball game with Auburn just a couple of years ago, and everybody gets to go stop at Bucky's on the way down. I'm sure that's going to be the thing. Oh, everybody's got to stop at Bucky's, but me, my stop, I've got to hit Whataburger, baby. Whataburger, Dylan. That is what I'm looking forward to. What do you do? What are you doing there? Are you wrestling with your phone?
No, I'm not sure exactly why there's the feedback there. I do apologize for that. But yeah, I am interested to see what's going on in terms of food on the way down there. It's funny. There's a sign in Fort Wayne that if you're on Highway 69, it said 367 miles to your nearest Bucky's. Which I always thought is very funny. So
are you kidding me?
There will be Bucky's. Yeah, it's really good. They do that to just let people that are a little further away know that they exist, which I love. I think it's a great marketing tactic. But I've never had Whataburger myself, so I'm interested in having that when I get down there.
Are you talking about Whataburger?
Yeah, I've never had it myself. I'm interested to see what happens, how it is.
Man, where is my Whataburger hat? Man, I need to pull my Whataburger hat out. Let me tell you, I've been a Whataburger fan forever. But yeah, we'll looking forward to that. That Bucky's thing. That's the only time I've ever been to one. Was on the way down to that game, Indiana basketball game against Auburn a couple of years ago. And if you haven't been to one, it's like a fuel station that's that's a spaceship and a super sized, maybe bigger than any big Walmart you've ever been in. And I don't even know what all they have inside there. It's like a damn grocery store. It's food. It's hell, you may be able to take a nap or get in a hot tub or something there. I don't know. They got it all going on.
Yeah, that's kind of that's what I'm hoping. And so we'll get to see when we're down there. But that's kind of the idea, is that these games are destinations, right? Like that's kind of what this is supposed to be, is the.
Yeah,
and play football in places. So we'll see. Hopefully that is a good destination for fans. They really have a good time. And again, like the Rose Bowl, it's just a place to go where you haven't been before. You don't play a Big Ten game down there. You're not really playing non-conference games down there very often. So it's a destination, and it's a chance for fans to celebrate their team one more time, and hopefully two more times if you're Indiana.
Absolutely. That's the thing. You don't want this to be the last stop. And I wonder, though, they are going to have a definitive home field advantage here. But if they're able to move on, they're going to likely be playing Miami in Miami. What will that be like? Will Miami have all those tickets sucked up, you think?
It's interesting because Miami, like during regular season games, they don't have much of a home field advantage. Like that's been a
Miami has complained about that for years, is that they don't have a stadium on campus that is not, that stadium is not on campus. They play at Hard Rock Stadium where the Dolphins play. And it's it, the atmosphere there for years has been a point of concern for the Miami administration because it's hard for fans to get there. It's kind of like UCLA with the Rose Bowl where fans have to come from a pretty far distance from campus to get there. And the atmosphere isn't particularly good. So I'm sure it would be obviously a pro-Miami crowd there, but probably not as much as you'd expect for a team playing at their home stadium. So I have been thinking, though, for as much as we talk about, oh, this is a new Indiana, the football team is put the past behind it, it would be very Indiana to, in the year they make the national championship game, to have to play a true road game in the national championship. That would be a very Indiana football thing to have happen. So we'll have to see how that goes.
And we've seen them handle every, but the thing is, everything that's been thrown at them, well, and that's usually the case when you're an undefeated team, but they've had it thrown at them. They had adversity in Iowa. And Iowa is not getting the respect they deserve. Iowa was better than so many of these stinking SEC teams that were propped up off of crap. I've said this so many times. Iowa lost four games, all right? And that's what eliminated them from anybody thinking they were it worth anything. They lost four teams to four ranked teams by a total, a grand total of 15 points.
Yeah.
15 total points. And yeah. So, yeah, if they had a semblance of an offense, they probably would have been a two-loss team.
Yeah.
And, you know, they sucked.
They led in the fourth quarter. I think they might have led in the fourth quarter of all four of those games. I can't remember the Iowa State game. They lost that one 16-13. But they led in the fourth quarter against Indiana. They led in the fourth quarter against Oregon. And then they led in the third quarter against USC. They were up two touchdowns against USC. So that was a fantastic team. Just like, that was the thing, is their defense was maybe kind of a half step down from what it's been the last couple of years, but their offense was actually shockingly competent for most of the season. It was not good by any stretch of the imagination, but it was basically average, which is we talked about for years. If Iowa could just have an average offense, how good could they be? They had it this year, and they played some like down to the wire games against two of the teams that are in the Final Four now. So they were extremely good, heck of a team, and then to get that bowl win against Vanderbilt was really, really cool. That was a good win for that program that really needed.
Good win for the Big Ten too.
Absolutely. I mean, Vanderbilt was right on the edge of playoff contention there. They were 10-2. It was one of those games where a lot of those players were like, we built this thing. We want to go out and we're going to play in the bowl games. So there weren't many opt-outs in that game. Diego Pavia played. And Iowa went in there and won it. Like, it was closer at the end, but Iowa dominated that game from start to finish. And with its offense, frankly, like, they moved the ball up and down the field on Vanderbilt. So really good coda to this season for Iowa. And if they can get another quarterback in the transfer portal this offseason, or if they have someone coming up, they do have a kid from Fort Wayne on the team, they will. They should be good again next year.
Have you ever had a tweet go viral?
Viral-ish, right? Like, I've had a couple of tweets that get like maybe 1,000 likes, but that's as much as I've had. It's none of the ones where it makes the app totally unusable or anything like that.
Unusable? I haven't heard that before. The day after the Rose Bowl, I was in my hotel room getting ready and had the TV on. Of course, while I was catching ESPN was on. You had Paul Feinbaum. You had I've talked about this week, but Cam Newton of all people and Ryan Clark, all SEC zealots. Ryan Clark played for LSU. Cam Newton, his dad was paid. No, I'm sorry. He played for Auburn, right? I was kidding. But and then Paul Feinbaum. The latter were extolling the SEC. Paul Feinbaum was going on and on about how Ohio State's loss was so much more embarrassing than Alabama's because he was ready to hand Ohio State the national championship, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I'm thinking, that's because you're an idiot. That's because you all keep thinking you know what you don't know. You don't know. But anyway, they went on and on. And then Ryan Clark eviscerated them. And I was surprised, but he just took them to school. I hope you guys can hear this. I'm going to play this.
Championship game. Ohio State had two Heisman finalists. They had two first-round wide receivers. They have elite players across the board. And on top of that, they have a $35 million roster. And they couldn't do anything other than lose the Big Ten championship game and get knocked out in its first appearance. So, yeah, I think you have to look at this very critically. After the Texas game at the end of August, I was ready to hand them the trophy. They looked unbeatable, and they were impenetrable the entire season until it really mattered, until they played in the championship game. And then, like, yeah, I thought maybe the Indiana game was fluky. It was not. Indiana outschemed them and outcoached them, and then Ryan Day decides to get cute at the end with Ryan Hart. Ryan Hartline, his offensive coordinator, who left for another job. He said, "Yeah, well, you can hang around, but I'm going to call the plays." Did you see anything in Miami game? I thought it was a disaster for Ryan Day and the DC that everybody talked about was the best of all time got run over as well. This was a colossal failure for Ohio State not to get any farther, and frankly, not to win the national championship.
I guess y'all just want to go home, or y'all want to hang out in the South, because this is ridiculous. The two people that call for the most SEC bias in hell ever to now be like Alabama getting their face stumped in, is it embarrassing? That isn't the thing you're most disappointed in? That Alabama getting Alabama by hoop school, something that you look at and say that's more disappointing than losing in a very close game to a really good team who also spent a ton of money in NIL, who has a quarterback who's in the same class as quarterbacks who are playing 3 years in the league right now, who has players from South Florida that are five stars, losing to that team in a very close game, finding a way to fight back in the second half. Is it worse than never being in the game, than playing against a team and not even pinching them, than looking at Indiana on the sideline and Indiana coach getting mad about everything? If they give a 5 yards, he pissed off because he know how sorry and soft you are. Are you serious? It's not even close. Ohio State, yes, they fell short of expectations. Alabama had now lowered the expectations of the entire fan base after that.
I thought that was, I just found that to be unbelievably amazing that he could fire that off the cuff, Dylan, first of all.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I think he's absolutely right. Is the Alabama, I mean, people talked about going into that game. There's a lot of Alabama people. Nick Saban said it on College Game Day. He said that all his golfing buddies think that they should just kill Indiana because they're Alabama and that's Indiana. And, like, I think that was, for a significant part of the fan base, that was, for the Alabama fan base, that was the expectation, right? Is that, like, yeah, this is not the Alabama team of the Nick Saban era. This is not our best team that we've had in 20 years, but we're still Indiana, or we're still Alabama, and they're still Indiana, and the order of the universe is going to stay where it should be. And that just was so not the case. It was the opposite of what it was, right? And Paul Feinbaum, to his credit, said it the day after the game, is that Indiana looked like a Nick Saban Alabama team in that game, where they just kind of ground you to dust over the course of four quarters. And so, absolutely more disappointing and embarrassing for Alabama that they couldn't even stay on the field against Indiana. Like, that was what was so shocking to me about that game, and something that I, as someone who has watched Indiana this year and thought they were the better team, did not expect was Alabama just didn't really want to be out there in the late in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter. They were just like, this is it. We're done. I thought it would be a four-quarter game. I thought it'd be fun, but it was not.
The I think it was the last rushing touchdown by, I think it was Kalon Black.
Kalon Black, yeah.
Went for like 20 something, 25 yards maybe, you know.
Yeah. Well, right, so Kalon right Black tackle. Kalon Black scored to make it 31-3, and that was 25 yards. And then Roman Hemby scored the last one from 18 yards out to make it 38-3.
Whichever one it was, it's in my mind. It's like they were just kind of reaching and, like, slapping at them. Not even – I was like, they're not even trying. It was like, that's that effort is wow. So I don't know what Alabama does. I'll be honest with you. I love Kalen DeBoer, but I don't know what Alabama does going forward, because the word soft has been thrown around, and they are that. Kalen is a super, super nice guy. You compare that, and you don't have a choice, but you compare that to somebody like Nick Saban, who, it's not that he's not nice, has demands, expectations. It's like Cignetti. It's not nice. He's taking care of what he's taking care of. Hey, we got to hit a quick break. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette is with me on his way to the ATL for Indiana, Oregon, and the Peach Bowl, as I will be. Taking a break right now, back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after this break.
The ISC Sports Network is your home for sports content across the Hoosier State. Find us live on TV and streaming or archived on our website and our app. The ISC is your one-stop shop for the content you want to see, including high school sports, college sports, and other great events throughout the year. Subscribe to our streaming service and get access to it all. ISC, local lives here.
Of Andy Moore Honda of Bloomington's 2026 models like the Honda Passport, Honda CR-V Hybrid, Honda Ridgeline, and more. Get more for your money at Andy. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you here on this Wednesday, joined by Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette as he's heading down to Atlanta. He covers the Indiana beat. I got to give Dylan credit for, he logs the most miles of anybody without question, because he makes the trip down to Assembly Hall very frequently. Did not miss a football game. No, seriously, dude, that's not an easy, I mean, what is that trip? That's got to be a 3-hour drive for you.
Yeah, it is. It's about 2 hours and 50 minutes. The good thing is that it's much easier now. You have since I-69 has been expanded and improved, and so you just go all the way down there, Fort Wayne, about 100 miles on I-69, get off down there, and it's much easier. But yeah, it's about 2:45, 2:50. And I really enjoy doing it. I love being down there at Assembly Hall. I love being down there at Memorial Stadium and getting to see everyone and being a part of those environments. That's a huge part of it for me, and being able to bring that to the readers back in Fort Wayne.
Well, it definitely shows the effort that you put in. Absolutely. And you should be commended for it. Man, lots going on in the college football world right now. In addition to these big, massive games coming up, the transfer portal is open. I mentioned Oregon loses a running back that had their longest run from scrimmage in the game against Texas Tech that they just played. They've also lost a few to injury, I think. So, but the portal is going on. But now there is a situation where I think it's Desmond Williams.
Damon Williams from Washington.
Washington quarterback Damon Williams said on social media Tuesday night he is entering the transfer portal, but that comes just days after he agreed to return to the Huskies and signed an NIL deal. I guess these guys think that they can do literally whatever they want with zero repercussions, because there have been no repercussions. But this would, I would imagine, I haven't, of course, I'm not an attorney. I don't even play one on TV. But I would imagine, unless the how this thing is written is ridiculous, that this would be something that they would easily win in court. But do you want a quarterback that you got to go to court to
meet? Yeah, I think that is the biggest question for me. Is like, yes, Washington says, and Washington has said they will fight this. It seems like they feel like they have a legal avenue to fight this. It seems like he signs something. But the question is then, okay, do you want, like you said, you put it exactly right. Do you want a quarterback who you have to go to court to fight to keep on your roster? Right. Obviously, he has some better offer that's out there.
Dylan. I think that even if you sit his ass and don't let him go or something, there has to be a stand made. There has to be a start. Everybody keeps asking, talking about there's no guardrails. Well, here's a start. Somebody's got to stand up. Nope, you can't. You can't sign an agreement and leave.
Right. I guess that's the question. Then is okay. What does this agreement say? Do they have like if he stays and they make him stay and he refuses to play because you can't make him play? Do they still have to pay him? Right. Like it would it be one of those things where if he tries to leave and they can enforce it, then would he sit out and like basically are we inventing the college football holdout here in real time? Right. Right? And so I don't know that it would be the particulars of whatever contract that is. From what I understand, those contracts, they're not particularly standardized, right? And so some of these players have agents that are very experienced that have done this thing for a long time with NFL players, and some of them have had agents that are kind of fly-by-night. And so I don't really know which one Damon Williams has. He's a very, very high-level player. He's a great player. And so you'd think he would have a pretty good agent, but that's not necessarily the case with any of these guys. And so a lot of it will depend on the exact particulars of that contract. But then the question is, if you try to enforce the contract and he refuses to play, does that splinter your locker room, right? Is that something you even want around your program? And I don't know what the answer is there, because I think at some point someone is going to try to do this. Someone is going to try to enforce one of these things. And then the question is, what are the repercussions, right? Does that hurt their recruiting going forward because they're the team that tried to control the player? I don't know. We'll have to see that play out, but this is a very high profile case, and Washington is very adamant from what we've heard last night that they are going to fight this. And so we'll see. Now, I think it's important to note when this happened with Tennessee and Nico Iamaleava last year, Tennessee initially said, we are going to fight this. And then in the end, they were like, it's fine, whatever, just go ahead. And I think that probably is going to be what happens here as well, is that they talk tough for a little while and then probably nothing happens and he transfers and they get their own guy and we move on. But it's kind of a very similar situation to what happened with Nico last year, where they had a deal in place and then he got a better offer elsewhere. He went back for more money, was kind of what it was with Tennessee. And they were like, basically no. And so then he left. And so we'll see what happens with this one, where it very much seems like, because of the way this timeline played out, he has a better offer in hand from someone else. And so we'll see how that plays out with this one.
Of course, everybody. I mean, that's how it's all about that. It all revolves around that. I mean, and we had the, I don't remember his name, the kid that signed the deal from a big deal from one school, left, went to Florida apparently because he was offered this major deal.
Jaden Rashada was his name. Yeah.
He's suing Florida and Billy Napier right now over that, yeah. I think, still. So
yeah, they offered him $13 million, and basically they did not have the money to pay up. There was some kind of story where they were supposed to give him basically $1 million up front. I don't know if that check cleared. It was a whole thing. So, yeah, he is basically suing. He ended up leaving Florida. He went to Georgia. He went to Arizona State for a while. I'm not sure where he is now. The thing
I'll tell you where he is now. He's at some small, dinky, intensely Division II school. Oh, how the mighty fall! How does someone?
Right. I think that that's that part valuable of this, is that for Jaden Rashada specifically at Florida, he was not he did not end up being the player they thought he was going to be. He was not a superstar quarterback. Damon Williams at Washington was their starter this year. He is already a one of borderline all Big Ten quarterback. I think he probably will be an all Big Ten quarterback next year if he sticks around. He is a very, very good player. So it's a little bit of a different situation where this is a proven commodity who has been very good for your team. And now you run the risk of losing him because A, you tried to keep him to the contract that you already signed. And B, he seems to have gotten a better offer. So we'll see what happens with that. But it's a different situation for sure.
Well, speaking of all of this, how about what Indiana has done over the last couple of days? And it is, to me, appears that all they did was open the doors and let the long line of people that were players that were standing outside waiting to come in, just come on in. It was like one of those it was like concert tickets, baby, to getting one of your favorite shows. Guys are coming to Indiana now. Josh Hoover, He had options, of course, but I am convinced that he came here specifically to play for Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah, I think that's probably likely. I mean, that basically the way that it's worked for Indiana the last 2 years, getting Curtis Rourke out of the portal and making him into an all Big Ten player, getting Fernando Mendoza out of the portal and making him the Heisman Trophy winner, they were going to have their pick of quarterbacks in this cycle. I'm not sure if Josh Hoover is the best quarterback from a pure talent standpoint that was in the portal in this cycle, but I think he might be the best.
Who do you think is?
That's a good question. I don't know if I would take Sam Levitt over Josh Hoover. I don't think I would take Brendan Sorsby over Josh Hoover. If you could get Damon Williams, I would take him, but I'm not sure that was really a viable possibility because he wasn't in the portal.
See, I wouldn't take him because of the sheer fact that you mentioned, what, like four or five teams he's already been to? I don't want that guy. That guy is not looking for stability, in my opinion.
And so then the question is, like, the one that I could say that I might take over Hoover in a vacuum is Mestemaker, the transfer from North Texas who went then with his coach to Oklahoma State. But I think with Josh Hoover, what Indiana got is the best quarterback for them, which is a guy who is running offense very similar to Indiana's before. I think that was the stat that I saw was that Indiana ran some huge number of RPO type plays this year. And Josh Hoover ran a very similar number of those type of plays at TCU. So he has experience in a system that is similar to Indiana's. He's been very productive in that system. Obviously, that's the buzzword that Kurt Cignetti likes to use, production over potential. He's been incredibly productive over his college career. He can make all the throws, big arm, can move a little bit in the pocket. It's kind of like Fernando Mendoza, where he's not going to be like a running threat as like a quarterback run guy, but he can move enough with his feet to keep plays alive, which is all you need. And so I do think that he might be the best quarterback for Indiana that they could have possibly gotten. And so it's obviously a huge win for IU to kind of keep that momentum going at that position where they have had so much success already. And then to add some pieces in the portal that really make a lot of sense for what they're losing, right? I think that the number one position that they really tried to bolster is defensive end, because they're losing they're losing Mikhail Kamara, they're losing Stephen Daly, they're losing Kellen Wyatt. Obviously, the latter two are already hurt, but they're also out of eligibility. And so you bring in three defensive ends, the two from Kansas State and Joshua Burnham from Notre Dame, who I can tell you as someone who covers Notre Dame was a quasi starter for the last 2 years for the Irish. He was very, very good and was just kind of caught in a numbers crunch there. Very similar to Pat Coogan, frankly, where this is a starter level player who just wasn't going to get a starting opportunity at Notre Dame. And so I think he'll be a very, very good player for Indiana going forward. That was a huge pickup for them. That spot in general, they really bolstered.
Absolutely. And I know the fans are getting restless. They're getting worried about Alberto. Alberto will be fine. I keep telling you, he knows what's going on. But safe travels, my friend down to Atlanta. But yeah, no, Alberto, he's got 3 years of eligibility, people, after this season. Yes, he's great backup to have, and he will have studied under Kurt Cignetti for 4 years by that time, under Curtis Rourke, under Fernando, and then under Josh Hoover. That's a pretty good resume.
Absolutely. I think that he will get a chance to start eventually. I think I do think that for Indiana, it's one of those things where you want to maximize the roster that you can make, right? Alberto is a very good player. We've seen him this year. I think he could be a starter and be a competent starter. Josh Hoover is a more proven commodity. So we talk about production over potential. Josh Hoover has the production, and Fernando and Alberto will have a chance to push him in the spring. He'll have a chance to have another season where he gets a lot of reps as the backup. And then he will have a chance to make a genuine push to be the starting quarterback, I believe, in 2027. We'll see how that plays out, whether Indiana dips in the portal again next offseason. I'm not sure exactly what the plan is there, but he will have a chance to prove in spring, in fall camp next season, that he deserves to be Indiana's starter. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is at some point.
And Indiana will go into next season potentially with the greatest talent level the program has ever had with this influx of talent, the guys that have come in, the tight end from Miami, the wide receiver from Michigan State, the defensive players from Kansas State. They are adding even better players than they had previously, and that is going to make this team even more dangerous for what they have staying behind as well.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think that's kind of the thing, is that they've added, I think they're 9 guys now. 8 of them were starters or quasi-starters at Power 4 programs this past season. So they're getting guys who are not only high-level players, but have proven it in power conferences. So that's a huge deal for them. I can give you a slight scouting report on the tight end from Miami, who is from my way, Leo.
Unfortunately, I got to take a hard break, brother. I got to get us out, but we'll look forward to it. Hey, safe travels, man. We'll see you on the flip side, brother.
Absolutely, Jim. See you in Atlanta. Looking forward to it.
Back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Appreciate you being with us. As we're at the halfway point of this Peach Bowl week now. Most fans heading down probably tomorrow. Some head down on Friday, game day, because the game's at night and it's a driver. It's a day drive trip. So be safe for those going down. But it looks like the weather is going to be good. The Atlanta is such a Southeastern Conference area, but it'll be a Big Ten area on this weekend. Kyle Nedenrip from the Indy Star joining us, and Kyle, I would be remiss if the first thing I didn't talk about is the absolute craziness of the basketball crazy, high school basketball crazy state of Indiana moving basketball games to accommodate a football game. Have you ever seen such the thing in this fashion? I get it for basketball, if this is for that, but I, when I saw that, I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
We're living in upside down times, Jim. I don't know what else to tell you. It's a bizarre situation, but yeah, I think it's the right move. I talked to some teams like Jeffersonville and New Albany immediately, or I think it was Saturday, they were kind of the first ones to make that move. And I was like, man, if those two rivals move their game, I mean, anybody probably should do that if they can. Now, some schools I've talked to, they have issues on Thursday with their gym, or they have something else scheduled, so they can't move it to that day. I know the Bloomington rivalry, that game's going to be Monday, the following Monday. So I think, and even schools that, I forget now who, there's a couple of games that are moving up to 6 o'clock on Friday, just so they can kind of get out of the way of and let people go home and watch it. So, I've heard some, I had some complaints from people. Surprised, I didn't think anybody would complain about this, but of course everybody complains about something. But I had some complaints about, well, why didn't they move when Purdue was in the Final Four, why didn't they move those games that time? And I'm like,
Purdue's not just the draw that the people think they are, for one thing.
Regardless, the season was over. There was no games to move at that point.
Yeah.
The Final Four was after the season.
They should have made something up so they could move it.
Yeah, I don't know what you want. I don't know what you want with that. But and then Notre Dame, I know I heard from somebody said they did move some of the South Bend games were moved. So they did locally move a couple of games there when Notre Dame was playing, which makes total sense for that area too. But yeah, I mean, this is different. I mean, IU being in the national semifinal in football is, there's just more IU alumni than any school in the state by far. As we all know, it's a historic deal to have IU do this. I mean, it's like Signetti said, it's a movie happening in real time. So, I mean, it's just.
And speaking of which, I spoke with Angelo Pizzo last night. I was texting with him. I said, Angelo, are you working on a screenplay for this damn thing yet? And he's like, I've heard that enough over the last, whatever. He said, especially ever since Signetti said what he said at the Rose Bowl. He says, but it's not happening. I guess not with him. But that's funny. But,
it is.
But, But it also, Kyle, to me, shows football is America's sport. And even in this basketball crazy state, we've seen how the Colts, the fan base for the Colts, even in their times of woe, they're there, man. They have not left. And now you've got this Indiana football program that is not only playing on this grand stage with these big time teams, looks like this is potentially going to be sustainable with the transfer portal, with what we've seen just in the last few days of guys that are coming in. And then eventually we're going to see a lot more Indiana guys, that those elite guys that we've talked about many times that have wound up at Ohio State or Michigan or Alabama or wherever they've gone. You're going to see more and more of those guys staying home. The Caden Currys, who knocked Fernando Mendoza into next week on that first play.
He did.
But those types of guys, man, Indiana is not, you know, it doesn't produce the most football talent in the world, but it produces some good ones.
Yeah, that's the difference, I think, from the Hoosiers movie to this. It's like if, you know, if Bobby Plump hit the shot and then Milan opened the doors for NIL deals for the next 20 years. It didn't happen that way in the movie. So, but now I think it's the movie that, you know, you're probably going to get tired of, because IU is going to, you know, they're well positioned, and I'm not saying they're going to go to the semifinals of the national, you know, playoffs every year, but they're well positioned, I think, to be in the mix to go to the playoff and then kind of roll the dice and see what happens every year. So I think that's the difference. And it does feel like a movie right now. You know, I think in 5 to 8 years, I guess we'll see, you know, if it was sort of a one-off deal or not. I don't think it is. I think they'll continue to be, as long as Cignetti's there, you know, and who knows, you know, how long he'll be there, you know, and I think he'll be there. I think he wants to be at IU and keep building this thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, however long that lasts, and then you don't know what happens after that. But, you know, I think they are well positioned, you know, and I, you know, just look at the portal, you know, and what they're doing in the portal and how many people want to be there, you know, and I know.
I was talking about that, Kyle. Yeah. They're not even recruiting these guys. These guys are coming to Indiana, I think, half of them.
Yeah, I mean, so look how much that's changed, you know, and I think we'll see it from a high school recruiting, as long as they, you know, it's going to be harder, obviously, just from a overall standpoint of getting high school players, just because the portal is so dominant right now. And I think things will go back to some normalcy, or there'll be some, hopefully at some point, some rule changes and things that make things more realistic, you know, like it should be. But I don't know if it's ever going to be go back to what it was as far as high school recruiting being your main source of talent incoming. But I am hopeful that, you know, it goes back to a little bit of normalcy from that standpoint. And you know, it's just really hard for the high school players right now. They have to kind of, you know, work their way up and maybe sign at a place that, you know, is maybe, I don't want to say beneath their level, but you kind of have to prove yourself a little bit first and then move up. So that's kind of the nature of things now. But yeah, to your point, I think IU is very well positioned for future success, no doubt about that.
And unless you are, I hate to use the rankings, but unless you are a 4 or 5 star that you and not a misjudged one, where you actually, you've got the talent and need to be molded and could be a contributor quickly, you're probably better off to go play at a MAC school, to go play, you know, at a Central Michigan, to go play at a Northern Illinois or a Kent State. Stephen Daly came from Kent State, was the baddest man in the land on the defensive line in the country. Mm-hmm. How many of these stories, you know, Indiana, this current Indiana team is built on those kinds of guys. Not going to be that way, you know, for long. But, yeah, I think you might be better off because you can go get experience. And that's what someone like Kurt Cignetti covets. Production over potential. If you can go get experience and you can start, well, there's the experience that you need to get, and that it will get you moved up much faster, I think.
Yeah, and you, we've seen it. I mean, I put out a list of local players in the portal, and you know where they're going, and some of them have already signed. And you know, there's a guy, there's a kid named Krishan McRae who played at Avon and was really good high school player. He's a little bit undersized, but super dynamic, explosive athlete. Went to Kent State, had a really good career there, and then signed with Michigan State and had another really good season last year, and he's back in the portal now. So that's an example. You know, Anthony Boswell, who played at Ben Davis as offensive lineman, you know, he sat out. He's a redshirt, committed to Purdue and redshirted, and then went to Toledo. He was all MAC offensive line this past year. Had a really good redshirt freshman year. Now he's going to Houston, so he moved his way up to a higher level. So, you know, there are examples out there, to your point, that you can see happening, and, you know, guys that maybe go to the MAC first and then kind of work their way up, or, you know, not just the MAC, but, you know, even FCS level or other kind of, you know, group of five type of situations. So, but yeah, that's kind of the nature of it now. And then, you know, you kind of earn your way up, I guess, is kind of how life works anyway, I guess. But that's kind of, it's kind of where we're at with that now. And also you can kind of work your way down, as we see. And, you know, there's no guarantees that you're going to be at the school you sign with if you don't produce.
And there's the kid from Speedway right now on the Indiana roster. Mm-hmm. Iliani, is that what? I don't know.
Demola. Demola is just what he goes by. Johnny's.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can just use kid. That. It's much easier.
He's,
but how about that story? How big, first of all, how big is Speedway?
Not big. And I sat down with, when he signed with IU, I talked to him before, but, you know, the day he signed, I went over and did a story on him because I just thought it was a unique, you know, situation. He didn't even play football until his freshman year. And then his freshman year, he didn't even get on the field at all. He didn't, you know, could barely know how to get his shoulder pads on. So, you know, then he's obviously a big dude. And as a sophomore, he started playing varsity. But again, like you said, Speedway is not a big school. It's a 2A program. You know, he obviously worked his way up and got better and better. It was a weight room warrior type of guy. And yeah, I cracked up to see, you know, how much he's helping out this team, because, you know, I didn't crack up. I mean, it's just great for, I'm super happy for him, but, you know, his story is really unique because he didn't grow up playing football. He's a Nigerian kid who came to the U.S. and, you know, didn't really, you know much about the sport at all. And now look at him. He's part of this great IU team and helping out on the field. So super cool. And again, an in-state kid who, you know, people look to him and people know him. And you're like, if he can do that, I can do that sort of thing. So yeah, it's really cool. And he is a super kid, and everyone who knows him really loves him. So it's cool to see what he's doing there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because for all of these other stories, you see one of those, and it is great to see. So with all of these changes in the schedule for high school basketball, what does that do to things? How is it impacting anything? I know, like the Bloomington teams, they were moving games around, as of course you would expect that. That should have been a no-brainer. But is it impacting anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's some concern about the referees, the crush of changes. But really, the Thursday schedule is usually pretty light anyway. So it didn't I don't think, affect too much as far as that goes. Those games just moved to Thursday. And then, you know, you'll still have quite a few Friday games. The biggest game in the state is moving to Thursday. It's Pike and Fishers play. They were supposed to play Friday, moved to – and that one, they were worried that they might not be able to move it because of Pike's schedule, but they did end up moving it to Thursday. So that one is now moved up a day. But yeah, I mean, I think we'll see, you know, there might be a few more today that we see come through. But I think, you know, most of the schools that have been able to change have done it. Like I said, some just aren't able to, or they just have to cancel the game, which you don't want that, you know. So if you don't, The crowds are probably going to be down for those games that are played on Friday, I'm sure, or people will bounce out by halftime or something. But yeah, I mean, basketball will still be happening around the state on Friday. It just won't be quite as many games.
Well, that's a good thing, but because we can always get those in. And then luckily, the national championship, if Indiana is fortunate enough to get by Oregon and move on, is on a Monday night. So you won't have to worry about moving games there. And so the season now just kind of getting into full throat for these guys. You're hitting January out, you're back out of the Christmas break, and they're all ready to really hit the schedule kind of hard now.
Yeah, Marion County tournament's already next week, which is always kind of a sign that we're getting not towards the end, but you know, somewhere in the middle for sure. And then the city tournament after that. So yeah, we're right in the middle of it. Curious to see this Fisher's Pike game. Should be a lot of fun. I think a lot of conversation about who's the best team between those two. Pike had a real scare last night against Noblesville. Had to Landon Lampley hit a three with as time expired to send that to overtime, and then they ended up winning. That was in the second overtime, and they ended up winning in two overtimes. So, but that should be a fun game. And I think, you know, there's a lot of good team. Crown Point's a really good team. You know, I've seen some of the best. Carmel's having a great season. You know, we'll see how it all shakes out. I think a little bit more, you know, I wouldn't say wide open, but probably a few more contenders that have a realistic chance this year. But I still think Fisher's, you know, especially once they get Jason Gardner back, you know, they're going to be certainly the team to beat. But really curious to see this Pike team play them on Thursday night.
Yeah, the high school season, always fun. And it's always – this year it seems there's a kind of a changing of the guard, it seems. Not the typical teams at top, although Fisher's is still there. And you still got the great play with Mr. Gardner Jr. How is he? I know he got injured there for a minute.
Yeah, I talked to him Saturday at their tournament. He broke a bone in his hand, so he's been out. He said he's on track, probably be back with maybe you know, 5-6 games left in the regular season. So he's not – it's not like it's a season-ending thing. And, you know, I talked to his mom a little bit too last night. She said, you know, it's kind of been good for him to see things from that – from the sideline, and you know, the team is still playing well. So, you know, it could be a blessing in disguise that, you know, he's sitting out and these other guys kind of have to step up a little bit. So I don't think it's all bad. You hate to see him go out. He's having a great season. So I hate to see him miss out on, you know, being able to, you know, put up numbers and win games and awards and things like that. But I think in the long run, it'll be fine and he'll come back. And, you know, it's his non-shooting hand. So at least from that standpoint, it shouldn't affect, you know, his shot or getting to the basket too much. So but he should be back. I would guess maybe about a month from now, roughly. It was 6 to 8 weeks, so maybe even less than that, somewhere in there.
What's up next for you, brother?
Just working on several different things, honestly, and mostly basketball, but even have some, you know, like I said, we got a football transfer portal up on IndyStar.com with the local guys and where they're headed, or, you know, the ones who are in the portal now. Working ahead on some basketball stuff. Should have a couple really good stories, hopefully, coming out soon on a couple different things. So, working away and looking forward to seeing that game Friday night.
You've always got great stuff coming out, man. Kyle Nedrip is the king of high school coverage in the state of Indiana. But have you seen Nebraska this year? Well, I'm not necessarily seen them play, but seen what the hell they're doing. They are 15-0, number 10 in the country, but 15-0. I think they're underranked. They're not, because of it says Nebraska on the front. I'm like, man, they're ranked higher than Michigan State right now.
It's the they beat Michigan State last week, and they don't look like, you know, you watch them play and you're like, why is this team so good? And then you actually sit down and watch the game and you're like, okay, well, they play great defense. They, you know, Rink Mast is probably super underrated by most people, but he's really, really good. And yeah, they're kind of the opposite of IU. They're like the they're like the basketball school you didn't see coming all of a sudden. So fun to see that. And they have a really good basketball fan base. That's obviously kind of like IU football, where you just never get rewarded for anything. So it's cool to see that they're having success this year.
Absolutely. And the Big Ten is deep. Kyle Nedrip from the Indy Star. Make sure you're being a subscriber and make sure you're following Kyle's content because it is great and it is prolific. Appreciate you, my friend.
You bet. Thanks, Jim. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Kyle Nedrip from the Indy Star joining us here on this Wednesday. We've got more coming up. Andy Staples from On3 will join us a little bit later. We've got to take a break now. We've got more coming up. We'll hear from some of the defensive standouts for the Hoosiers when we come back right after these messages.
The ISC Sports Network is your home for sports content across the Hoosier State. Find us live on TV and streaming or archived on our website and our app. The ISC is your one-stop shop for the content you want to see, including high school sports, college sports, and other great events throughout the year. Subscribe to our streaming service and get access to it all. ISC.
Welcome back. AndyMohada.com is what that said. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Wednesday. Glad that you're with me. Jim Coyle here as always. Andy Staples will join me next from On3, the On3 Network. That is the nation's most prolific college sports site. TheHoosier.com, part of the On3 Network, where the greatest in information can be found without doubt. If you want to keep up with everything that's going on with the transfer portal in college athletics for the your Hoosiers or whichever team you might follow, that's the route to go. And right now, TheHoosier.com has got a special 50% off. Not only that, you get a full year subscription of The Athletic with it. But it's that subscription, you get access to all the teams. You can see what all the people are saying on the other boards. You can go on the boards for the Indiana and see what those folks are chatting about. But it's the inside information that you get that is amazing. No one is breaking the stories that On3 does. So I would advise you to go to TheHoosier.com. Hey, and also for our Bloomington peeps, head out to the new David Buster's. They've got specials for all the IU games. Pete's Bowl, they'll have $10 wings, $5 drafts, $5 margaritas. It's a great place to catch the game with friends or family. Got three gigantic wall TVs over 20 or 30 big screens. Plan your next watch party or birthday party at David Buster's. And Sunday is fun day. Half price off on games. Don't forget about our buddy Dr. J down in Sellersburg. Keep that championship smile with Reynolds Family Dentistry. And you can sign up for the Hoosier.com newsletter, by the way. That's free. Just go to thehoosier.com and look for newsletter, and you can sign up for that. You get that for free every day. Looking forward to talking to Andy Staples today, as he has... They are him and Ari Wasserman have their have a podcast on three, but they keep a national perspective on the college football game, and looking forward to their take on where things are now and what has happened in just the last few days with the transfer portal. It's the influx of talent is crazy. I didn't even mention the Boston College running back, Turbo Richard. The basketball schedule continues. And I'm sure Don Fisher has got his work cut out for him, as the Hoosiers, they actually play tonight at 6:30 at Maryland. So Fish will be down there, and then he'll head on to Atlanta from there. But Maryland... 7-7 right now. So here's an opportunity for Indiana to not only pick up another conference win, but to pick up a road win. And as a matter of fact, this is one of those games that I don't care what anybody else says. I call these must-win games. You must win these damn road wins against teams that are 50-50. You're 11-3. If you want to continue to move up, because the Big Ten is deep. When you run up against Nebraska, when you run up next, which is next, when you run up against Michigan State and Michigan and Purdue and Illinois and Iowa, it ain't not going to be that easy. Hell, they lost at Minnesota. You've got to win these games. It's a must-win game. Got to win it. You don't win this game, now you put the onus. You have to beat a better team, a tougher team, because you can't make up for that by beating Joe Schmo. Must-win game for the Hoosiers. Played well against Washington on their last outing. But it's a 10-point win. But Washington's a decent team. Got to give them that. They're better this year. Their next game, this Saturday at noon, which that's going to be another tough one for Fish. Well, he'll be back in Bloomington, or where he lives there over in Greenwood, late or early Saturday morning. That's going to be a rough one for him. Man. But I don't think the Fish is complaining, people. He's loving life. Getting to call these great games. And it is spectacular to see. How about all the firings in the NFL? I mean, it is always, what they call it, Black Tuesday? You always have that happen, but it would seem like a high number and some very high profile coaches. And I think I mentioned earlier, maybe I didn't, Pete Carroll fired from the Raiders. Raiders have the number one draft pick. They're going to pick Fernando Mendoza. I think that Tom Brady has already made mention of that, Tom Brady being a minority owner in that club. But Fernando's going to go to the Raiders, and Tom Brady is going to have a hand in hiring that new coach. It will be very curious to see who that is. With Kurt Cignetti's success, will the NFL come calling after him? I wouldn't be surprised, but I also wouldn't be surprised if the NFL came calling after Bryant Haynes because of the ability to scheme with the talent he has had, with the ability to have the best defense in the country, with the talent he has, with the ability to put up the numbers they have, with the talent they have, for the ability they have stopped the best teams in the country with the talent Indiana has versus what the other teams have. That's coaching. That's intelligence. That's putting guys in the best position to be successful. Let's take a break. Andy Staples is going to join us next. Appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday. We're back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday of Peach Bowl week, the national semifinal between number one Indiana, number five Oregon, in addition to the Fiesta Bowl with Miami and Ole Miss. Andy Staples from On3 joining me now. And if you're a subscriber to thehoosier.com, which if you're not, you are missing out, or any of the On3 sites, you know Andy and his work with Ari as well, as you guys have a great podcast each week, extraordinarily informative about the college world in general. But man, oh man, this has been so much fun for everyone. It seems like this is even fun for a certain portion of the national media. Not the ones who are still.
Why wouldn't it be fun? My job is to cover college football.
There you go.
What about my day is not fun? Like, everything's awesome.
Yeah. For you guys, especially how you all approach it, because you have been open to everything, and that, but there are still a certain group, it seems like, that it's so hard to grasp, put your mind around the fact that this is real, that these dynasties of the SEC of the old days when players were kind of locked in, and I don't care what mm-hmm. people say, they were getting paid and yada yada. It's
But I was never against paying people for being good at sports. No, so it was never a problem for me.
No, but now that everybody can do it, it's fun because it's sort of leveled the playing field, and it's awesome to see it all happen. I mean, Nebraska and basketball, my God, they're 15-0, dude. They're
just to, their fans don't want to hear that though, because they're like, why can't the football team do this?
Yes, exactly.
Dude, Hoiberg to coach the football team, maybe.
Well, and don't think that people haven't mentioned that haven't in floated at Indiana. I'm talking about. Nothing to do with Coach DeVries. It's just Cignetti has that effect, but. And crazy is this, I hate to jump on this stuff, but with this success, you know, Cignetti's locked down, you know, for other schools. Now there are no worries there, but is there a worry from the NFL? The way he does things.
Yeah. What he does is work anywhere. And so sure, there's a bunch of NFL jobs open, but I think when he's the best college football coach working right now. I mean, think about how hard and how long he worked to get to this point, to show people he could be here. This is not somebody who took the easy way. And it's somebody who kind of, I would imagine if we gave Kurt Cignetti truth serum, he'd say he felt kind of blocked. Like he wasn't on that, you know, preferred coordinator path. And that's why he goes to Indiana University of Pennsylvania to become a head coach first. It's not, you know, it's not, I was an SEC coordinator and then I got an SEC job or an ACC job. It's a lot more difficult climb when you go from there to Elon to James Madison when it's an FCS school. Like he worked pretty hard to get here. I would think at age 64, he's probably going to keep kicking ass at Indiana until he doesn't want to coach anymore.
Yeah, I agree, because I, for one thing, when people were concerned about him leaving for another college job, I was like, no, I think he loves the fact that he's doing it first where nobody else could do it, where he was told it couldn't be done, and now he's doing it where it couldn't be done, and he's going to keep on doing it.
There's no reason not to. You know, I think one of the interesting things about this whole playoff cycle is watching Lane Kiffin's move from Ole Miss to LSU, because that move tells you that he probably didn't think Ole Miss could win the national title. Well, guess what? It can. I mean, because I think all four teams that are left in the field have a shot, and this feels to me like the first time we've seen a Final Four in college football where all four teams had a shot, and Indiana is going to be the favorite. And Indiana's playing the best of any of them right now. But you could, if you told me, you know, you created a scenario where Miami wins the national title or Ole Miss or Oregon or Indiana, I would believe you. I would completely believe you.
Yeah. And that's what makes it so. The last 2 years of college football has been incredible. And you've got to credit the transfer portal. I mean, NIL is a part of that, but it's the transfer portal. It's the ability to move.
I'm glad you get it, Jim, because that's. Without the freedom of movement, the money part doesn't really matter. It's the freedom of movement that has allowed the market to become much more efficient. And look, Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama can't stockpile five stars. Like I remember when Urban Meyer was at Ohio State, the path, and he would recruit to this. Like when he would tell these five stars that he was recruiting, hey, you may not play much your freshman year. You may only play special teams your sophomore year. But then you're going to start as a junior, and you may go to the league after that year, which they did a lot of the time. That was kind of how their corners worked for, oh gosh, like 8 years with Ohio State. So they can't do that anymore. Those guys aren't going to sit. They're going to get paid handsomely to go start somewhere right away. And if they do go sit for a year, they're going to realize, wait, I can go somewhere else and play and be good and get noticed. Because like, There's no Big Ten school that the NFL won't find you at. There's no SEC school that the NFL won't find you at. But there's also no ACC or Big 12 school the NFL won't find you at. So these guys are going, okay, I'm going to find the place where I can get paid the most and play right now. And if we can win championships, that's great too. And the thing is, you can win championships in a lot more places now than you could before. Indiana is absolute proof of that. And, you know, there's no reason they can't keep doing this.
Yeah, and I think that they can get players where they're still not going to have the biggest NIL pockets, but their NIL pockets are probably going to grow because of this, obviously. I mean, a success breeds success. But I also think someone like Josh Hoover, I think that he's taking less money than Brendan Sorsby is at Texas Tech, because I think, I'll be honest with you, I think Brendan Sorsby went for the bag. Josh Hoover says, you know what? I think I want to go play for Kurt Cignetti and move up to that. And
well, I would argue that Brendan Sorsby probably looked at how Texas Tech assembled the roster last year and said, oh, they're willing to pay for talent to put around me too, which they did it on defense last year. They didn't do it very well on offense, which is probably why they had to overpay for Brendan Sorsby this year. But yeah, there probably is a little discount to go play for Cignetti and to go play with some of the guys that they're going to bring in and put around you. And also, let's remember, this is still a developmental program, even though the development in a lot of the cases that are on the roster now happened in Harrisonburg, Virginia. You know, they've done a good job of taking the people that they recruited out of high school and turning them into NFL players, which I think still matters. And so when you see where D'Angelo Pons gets drafted, where you see where Elijah Surratt gets drafted, that's going to make a difference. And people are going to notice that. But also, let's look at who they're recruiting out of high school. Charlie Becker is a pretty damn important piece of this team.
Wow.
He's a guy that Cignetti signed out of high school, developed him. And look, he runs like the wind, and he's, you know, 6'3", 6'4", super long, yes. Like, he's what you want in a receiver today. And so I think if I'm Josh Hoover, I'm looking at that and going, oh, these guys know what they're looking for. They're going to put some players around me.
It is amazing to me that, which there's so much of this is amazing, and I covered, and it's hard to, you know, not get lost in it, but to just look at how good they are at identifying the guys they need, the fits that they need, mm-hmm. and developing them to the level they need them, and then getting them to execute at the level that they execute. All of that sounds very simple. It's A, B, and C, but ask any coach in the world, they spend their lives trying to get that accomplished, and it's damn near impossible.
Parent who has kids that age. Yes. Like, It's impossible to make one of them do something on a consistent basis, much less 100 of them. And that's what Indiana's doing. And it's what Cignetti's been able to do basically his entire career as a head coach. And there aren't many who can do that. I think, you know, Kirby Smart has done that historically, Ryan Day, Nick Saban did it, but it's really difficult to get that age group and a large group of them to perform consistently on a week-by-week basis. And that's Indiana is as consistent as a team as we've seen in college football in a long time. Like this particular version of Indiana, they don't make a lot of mistakes. When you make a mistake, they bury you. They just keep, they come in waves essentially. And it's been fun to watch because it's, you know, part of the charm of college football is there's going to be some quirky stuff. People are going to make stupid mistakes. People are going to drop balls. And Indiana doesn't really do that.
Not only do they not drop them, they make these most incredible catches. You mentioned Charlie Becker. I know everybody thinks of Omar Cooper's catch, the catch of the year.
The one before it was just as good. Yeah.
And Charlie Becker has done that multiple times in the Big Ten Championship as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking just about the closing catch.
Well, the one over the middle of the Rose Bowl at the end of the half was another one. I mean,
yes.
Fernando threw it where only Becker could catch it, and he went up and got it. And I'm not sure how many guys on that field on either side of the side or on either sideline could have gone up and gotten that.
You know, and a look at this team how many teams have had 2,000-yard rushers, quarterback with the most touchdown throw passes in the country, a defense that to me is the best defense in the country. I don't care what Ohio State's numbers say. This defense is the hardest to play against. Bryant
Haynes, the hardest to run on. That's the scheme. Yeah, that's the reason I would favor Indiana to win this whole thing, is they are so hard to run on. And like Oregon, it's really tough that they're losing Jordan Davison right now. That's a horrible blow to them, because
and Lamar, another guy.
Yeah.
In the portal.
Yeah, I love Noah Whittington. I think he runs really hard, but it's when you only have one back that you really can rely on against a defense like Indiana's, that's gonna be a tough day for that guy, because you're sending him into the teeth of that defense over and over. I actually saw somebody on Twitter suggested this, and I would be kind of intrigued if Oregon would line up Kenyon Sadiq at tailback and just hand him the ball, because he's 240 pounds and he runs faster than most receivers. Like, I'd kind of be curious. I don't know how well he'd read blocks, but I'd be very curious to see it, because this is a desperate situation for them.
Push down the field, baby. Just teach us pushing.
I mean, look at what Indiana, other than the Old Dominion game, which I really get why Cignetti was so mad after that game. But other than the Old Dominion game, nobody has been able to run on them. They've held everybody under their season rushing total. It's why you knew they were going to kill Alabama, because Alabama hadn't been able to run the ball at all against anybody good. And, you know, they did this to Oregon already. Like, they have shut down Oregon's run game and made Dante Moore beat them through the air. And as good as Dante Moore is, and as good as some of those receivers are, Indiana's defense is really tough to do anything against when you've been made one dimensional.
Yeah, and Bryant Haynes has done a phenomenal job, because he lost Kellen Wyatt early in the season. So then Stephen Daly is plugged in. Doesn't do anything but lead the nation in tackles for loss. Then they lose him before Alabama, but they're able to scheme around that. And when they played Oregon prior to this, back earlier in the season, Dante Moore had been sacked one time. Indiana got him on the ground 5 times.
Yeah.
Huge for them, in addition to stopping the run game. When you can't run the ball and you are not able to pass it, it's tough. It's going to be a tough day.
And you can look at the Orange Bowl a little bit, and it's a little bit misleading, the score of the Orange Bowl. Oregon won 23-0. But they scored at the end because essentially Oregon's defense or Texas Tech's defense finally broke, because Texas Tech's offense could not do anything. Couldn't possess the ball, couldn't keep it for any length of time. Kept giving it back, couldn't move it when they had it. And so that was a really tight game for a while. And you saw Oregon did struggle to block people like David Bailey. And obviously David Bailey is a first-round talent. But Indiana's got pass rushers who are just as productive. And so I do think it's possible to get Dante Moore on the ground as much as the first meeting. And if I were Will Stein, the Oregon OC, I'd be moving him in the pocket as much as possible, because that's really your only chance, especially if you're not going to be able to run the ball.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to see how this game turns out, because I think it is going to be a challenge. Dan Lanning is a great coach, so he's not going to just stand idly by. It's going to be interesting to see the adjustments both teams make, having played prior, because they know that they're not, but neither team is Oregon, the same thing.
Right. And Oregon's defense is loaded. I mean, there's so much talent on this defense. There's some really special players. And, you know, you saw it with Mateo Uiagalelei ripping the ball out of Baron Morton's hands in the Orange Bowl. Like, most guys go for the sack or they go for the strip. He just grabs the ball from him. And if you watch the slow-mo replay of that, once he's carrying the ball, he's a former high school tight end, so you know he's got some experience with it. But you're like, that is just a supreme athlete making a supremely athletic play. And Oregon's got a lot of that all over its defense. And Brandon Finney Jr., who had the 2 picks and a fumble recovery in the Orange Bowl, like, he's all over the place. You don't want to throw in his direction. I believe he had the pick six against Indiana in the first game. I'm blanking on it. I think it was Finney who had that one. But it's going to be so much fun to see this offense match up against this defense again.
Yeah, and to see Cignetti and Lanning match up. So the two great minds. And then, of course, we'll talk about whatever results happen after that. But that could be interesting of epic proportions, because if it's Miami, you get Miami and Miami. And if it's Ole Miss, then the team I cover will be trying to beat the team that my daughter is currently at school at. And she will not be happy.
That would be something. Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, the two matchups would be so different, but you can't put the cart before the horse, because Oregon is very, very good. But yeah, this is it's crazy to think. And that's what we keep asking the question on our show. If you told somebody this 10 years ago, if you'd said this is what's going to happen, this will be the Final Four, this is what's going to look like, they would have thought you were insane. The Indiana part alone would have made you would have made them think you were nuts.
I would have thought you were insane, because it doesn't happen. There's this, even with the transfer portal, you can't fathom that, because it wasn't done with NIL. It was done, like we said, with the transfer portal, by getting the right guys. And it was a coach that didn't come from a big name school. He came from James Madison.
I think Cignetti's changed the way other schools look at how they evaluate coaches, because I don't think Kyle Whittingham would have been hired at Michigan if not for Cignetti's success. Because Kyle Whittingham's 66 years old. Michigan isn't hiring Kyle Whittingham to stay for 20 years. They're hiring him because they think he can win right now. And
they don't think he's going to cause them any more embarrassment.
Yes, there is that. His his Instagram follows are decidedly more chaste than his predecessors. So, but yeah, no, I think, But I agree with that, and I expect him to come in and win immediately. Like I expect that.
And the Big Ten, how much better has the Big Ten gotten? Pat Fitzgerald is back in the Big Ten. You've got Matt Campbell over at Penn State now. Mm-hmm. Kurt Cignetti, of course. Who went to Michigan State? I can't even remember.
That's Fitzgerald.
That's right. So it's just. Kyle Whittingham in Michigan. I mean, but the Big Ten has to get better. Right now in basketball, the Big Ten is just kicking ass. It's like you've got Nebraska 15-0, like I said, but they're like 6-7 deep.
I think it's better at football than people realize. There's one school that I think was criminally underrated all year.
Iowa.
And that's the one. Yeah, yeah. Look at what Iowa did against Oregon. Look at what Iowa did against Indiana. They played a full-strength Vanderbilt, beat them in the bowl game. They pushed USC to the brink. Iowa was this close to being a playoff team. Like, you put a really dynamic quarterback at Iowa, and they're scary as hell.
I've said that all year long. They lost four games to four ranked teams by a total of 15 points.
Yeah.
They were deserving to be in the CFP more so than a few of these SEC teams that were propped up, in my opinion, but whatever. Andy Staples from On Three. You can catch him if you're a subscriber to the Hoosier.com or any of the On Three outlets, as you should be, because it is the most prolific site and putting out the latest intel and the best content. Andy, they can also catch you and Ari with your show as well, and I'm sure a myriad of other things.
Yeah, just subscribe to the On Three YouTube page if you'd like to catch Andy and Ari on Three every weekday, or we are available wherever you get your podcasts.
Make sure you find it, because it is great, great content and very informative. Andy, I cannot thank you enough. Hopefully we get to do this one more time or so after the national championship comes up. Hey, enjoy your week, man.
My pleasure.
Appreciate you. Andy Staples joining me here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. And that is going to wrap up the day. We're off to Atlanta, coming to you tomorrow from the College Football Hall of Fame. Appreciate you being with us. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. Stick around for Glass. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.